Hey everybody, what's up? Chad Wesley Smith here. Another episode of Beers with Chad. Today I'm drinking from Brewery X, which if you're local here in Southern California, you've probably had this a bunch at Angels games or Ducks games. They're in Anaheim over by Angel Stadium and the Honda Center. So this is a West Coast IPA for their fourth anniversary. So congrats to them on 4-year anniversary. Juggernaut coming up on its 15-year anniversary this summer of 2024, which is kind of wild. So as soon as I saw the can on this one, like, yeah, I pick sometimes by the coolest looking cans or the, you know, best looking labels on a wine bottle. Heroes in a Full Pint, Tumble Time. I can't not go with a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles themed can. So I'm 37 years old. I think probably right in the prime age range to really love the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I was always a Raphael guy, you know, going for the bad boy. If I was ranking them, I'd probably go Raphael, Michelangelo, Leonardo, Donatello. I mean, Donatello was kind of a nerd. And, you know, whether it was the movies, you know, Ninja Rap. I played Ninja Rap for my nephew Calvin recently for the first time. He just turned 7, and he was loving the musical stylings, the early 90s musical stylings of Mr. Robert Van Winkle, aka Vanilla Ice, and the Ninja Rap. But yeah, those live action movies, the cartoons, the action figures, everything. Can't not love Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So go and tell me in the comments, who is your favorite turtle? Today I'm gonna be talking about, on this very cloudy, rainy Southern California day, about the Waste Management, upcoming Waste Management Open, Phoenix Open, this weekend, the Wild Party weekend there in Scottsdale. A little bit about, you know, what's going on with LIV Golf and Jon Rahm and you know, the new equity agreement that they just came to, as well as there was a list on ESPN this past week ranking all 57 Super Bowl winners as the best Super Bowl winning team on down. So I want to talk about the other side of that, but the best teams that didn't win the Super Bowl, specifically the best teams that lost the Super Bowl. So they at least had to have made it to the Super Bowl to qualify here. So yeah, that's going to be today's episode. Make sure like, subscribe, rate, review, all that good stuff. Brewery X, Heroes in a Full Pint, Tumble Time. Cheers.
People around always find a way of looking down. They remember my family name, always talking about where I came from. Wouldn't give me the time of day, never listen to a word I say. Now they want to act like their best friend. What a coincidence.
All right, so the PGA Tour is in full swing, one of the biggest marquee events just passed, and the next biggest one coming up this next weekend. So this weekend, the guys are in Phoenix, the Phoenix Open, Waste Management, Wasted Management, you know, big party out in the desert. Last week, they were at Pebble Beach in pretty bad weather. Pebble Beach, where your boy will be next week, all week. So I'll definitely do a podcast up there. Really pumped about that trip. I'm playing Pebble, Spanish Bay, Spyglass, whole week with some buddies. So I'll talk more about that next week. But you saw some incredible scoring up there. Wyndham Clark breaking the Pebble record with Preferred Lies. Some people are upset about that, but I figure with it being so wet, no rollout, all that kind of stuff, you know, 6 one way, half dozen the other. So congrats to Wyndham Clark there on his 3-day victory. And you know, that 3-day victory, of course, led people on the internet to troll as they do and talk about, oh, PGA is just like LIV now. You know, how are you liking those 3 rounds? You know, LIV was going on Sunday because they were down in a much better weather spot near Tulum in Playa del Carmen, Mexico at the Mayacoba. And, you know, so I don't know if people like really watch LIV. If you saw the ratings, the Saturday Pebble Beach was like 1.5 million and the Sunday Live was like 0.6 or 600,000. So, you know, still nowhere near each other in ratings, but with all the ongoing, the PIF and PGA and Strategic Sports Group negotiations and everything that's going on, and the SSG, which is this conglomerate of, you know, other sport team owners like guys from the Fenway Group and Arthur Blank, the owner of the Falcons, Steve Cohen, the owner of the New York Mets, invested $3 billion into the PGA Enterprises, new for-profit enterprise. And part of that deal is that they, you know, that they are doing some sort of equity share for the players. And actually, just before I started recording, they announced, a memo came out, a little bit about how they're structuring that. So what they're doing with that is $930 million of equity out of, I think they're valuing the, or sorry, $1.5 billion of equity, but 930 of that 1.5 billion are gonna go to the top 36 players. And I believe that this PGA Enterprises is being valued at $12 billion right now. So, and they're gonna base that, how they split that money up for those top 36 golfers based on the results of the last 5 years, as well as their PIP, their player impact program, which is basically how much social media reach the players have. That's gonna determine how much of that 930 million they get. I'm assuming they're not just doing an even split, which would be 25.8 million to all 36, but they're gonna do some sort of tiered system. Because certainly, you know, Rory has more impact on the PGA over the last 5 years than, you know, who would be around the 36th ranked person, you know, like Brian Harman or someone like that, who just doesn't have the fan base and the results. You know, not to say he's not an incredible golfer, but, you know, and he's had some great results, but not the same level of impact, certainly not consistently over the last 5 years. So, you know, as you look at like official world golf rankings, you got Rory and Scotty up there as, you know, a little bit longer term kind of real torchbearers now for the PGA, with Rom moving on to Live. Hovland played incredibly last year, and I'm sure is going to continue to do that. Xander, Wyndham Clark just broke a record. Cantlay, Max Homa, you know, Max Homa's awesome, one of my favorites. Matt Fitzpatrick, this new Ludvig Åberg, a lot of great players, but the standout, you know, fan recognition names, casual fan recognition names are dwindling with the guys going to Live. So this $930 million of equity that they're splitting up, that's really to satisfy, to placate, to assuage these loyal PGA guys who didn't go to Live, and, you know, to make them feel more whole, certainly. But even if they were to do something like the top three guys get 10% each or 15% each of that $930 million, even then you're looking at, you know, 10%, $93 million up to, you know, what, $135, $140 million if they got 15%. Probably closer, if they're doing 15% to those guys, of like what Scottie Scheffler would have gotten if he went to Live. But Rory, you know, he could have been looking at like $250, $300 million, certainly, if he went over. And then that means that the bottom 36 guys, now they're going to get less than the even split, the $25.8 million. They're going to be maybe more like 10 or 15, which, you know, like number 36 on official Golf World rankings. And again, that's not how they're doing it. It's over the last 5 years. All right, number 37, let's say JT Poston, he probably could have gotten more than $10 million from Liv if he wanted to go over, you know, Minwoo Lee, Harris English, Justin Rose. Those are the guys kind of down in that range, as there are still some Liv players on those rankings. So that comes to the next thing is what is going on with the PIF and the PGA and Strategic Sports Group now that they made that, you know, brought that money in? How could the PIF and PGA coexist? Rory has really changed his tune, you know, saying that he thinks that they should just let the Live guys back in kind of without penalty. Scottie Scheffler came out and said, no, we can't let them back in just with nothing. And from the Live side of things, those guys want to be back. They want to be playing at Pebble Beach, at the Waste Management, in a couple weeks at the Genesis. You know, as evidenced by John Rahm, you know, the world, you know, number three, maybe he would still be number two or number one if he was still in the, was playing the PGA schedule so far this year, coming out and saying he is emotional about not playing Waste Management this weekend and missing out on, you know, the Amex in the desert a couple weeks ago and Pebble Beach, and I'm sure the same will be for Genesis and all those other, you know, the elevated events, you know, the Players Championship, all that kind of stuff. And I believe his contract's only 3 years for his $400 million that he got. So, you know, in 3 years, I'm sure he's going to be back playing PGA events. How much sooner will it happen? It does seem to almost be inevitable. A year, year and a half from now, I'd expect to see those guys back playing. And they clearly want to be back playing. And, you know, great move by Rahm. He will have gotten his cake and eaten it too if 12 months from now, or, you know, this, he's playing next year's Waste Management Open after missing 1 year and, you know, getting $400 million richer in the process. So interested to see where all that goes, interested to see as they explain more about how that $930 million of equity is going to get split up by those 36 players. But obviously that's just an effort, again, to assuage and placate those guys who were loyal to PGA. Will it make them totally whole of what they've gotten? Probably not quite. Some of them maybe in the middle will do a better job, but I don't know. You know, as far as Waste Management goes, you know, picking golf winners is about as hard as it can get. If I was to make a bet on it, you know, so kind of balancing to get some decent odds with a player who's been playing a lot better, you know, from the end of last season into the Ryder Cup now in the early part of this year, I would say Justin Thomas would be an interesting pick for the winner. That, you know, he's still a name, so he doesn't have the best odds, but he's playing a lot better. So I wouldn't be shocked if JT was to get the win there. And of course, you got to make a bet. Top 10 for Jake Knapp, Mesa Verde's own. Again, you know, I've known Jake since he was a senior in high school here in Costa Mesa, California. We're members at the same country club. He, you know, was T3 at the Farmers Open a couple weeks ago, and he lives now in Scottsdale, has a house out there, with this being his first year as a card-carrying PGA Tour member. So, you know, a bit of a home course situation for him. Home course, I guess, for a lot of professional golfers who, you know, seem to mostly live in Scottsdale or Florida. But he's going to smash the ball. He's going to, you know, look cool with his mullet. I heard him talking on a podcast today, which I got to get him to come talk to me, talking about that he's squatted 365 for four, and I think it was bench 265 for three, something like that, which has got to make him, you know, Jake's probably 6'1", 185, which has got to make him, you know, if not the strongest, one of the strongest weight room guys on all of tour, and that's evidenced by his high 180, you know, on course ball speed right up to 200 if he really wants to get it moving. So those are some golf thoughts. Moving on to football. On Friday, I'll be back on and talk, you know, my full predictions and picks and everything for the Super Bowl this Sunday. But this past week, they had a list on ESPN of the best, they're ranking all 57 Super Bowl winners. So after a quick break and a couple sips of this beer, I'll be back and we'll talk about that. Today's episode of Beers with Chad is brought to you by the Juggernaut AI app. If you want the smartest program for you, fully customized, adapts to your feedback, grows as you grow as a lifter, visit juggernautai.app and use code BEERS to save on your monthly subscription. All right, so this week, ESPN ranked all 57 winning Super Bowl teams in the history of the Super Bowl, and those rankings came out going from 10 to 1. The 1998 Denver Broncos, 95 Cowboys, 1975 Steelers, 2004 Patriots, 1973 Dolphins, of course, the only undefeated team, 1992 Cowboys, 96 Packers, 89 49ers, 85 Bears, and number one, their best team ever, basically the 1991 Washington Redskins, the Hogs, John Riggins, Doug Williams, all those guys. So awesome list. Of course, ranking the winners, you know, growing up, little kid in the early 90s, those Cowboys teams, 92 and 95 that they mentioned on there, were so awesome to watch. I loved Emmitt Smith. I had, you know, a team poster up in my room because I think any little kid is just a front runner. You know, so when I was 6 or 7 years old and the Cowboys were winning, I loved the Cowboys. And I used to have this a VHS tape, 1993, The Year in Sports, which was like this Sports Illustrated VHS tape. You probably find it on YouTube now. And it was like a full year retrospective of all the teams. And it was showing that first, so the 92 Cowboys who played in the 93 Super Bowl, showing that season, that Super Bowl against the Bills, the Cowboys' first win. And they just had so much swagger and attitude. And, you know, I'm seeing guys high step in the end zone. I think this is the coolest thing ever. So I had, you know, a Dynamic Duo poster in my room. Not a triplets poster, but I had Troy Aikman and Emmitt Smith. I don't think my mom probably wouldn't have let me have Michael Irvin poster and a Cowboys team photo from the 95 Super Bowl and a lot of that kind of stuff. And, you know, now my best friend of about 20 years, Paul, is from a small town outside of Dallas and grew up a diehard Cowboys fan. And now, of course, through my work with the 49ers strength and conditioning, I'm, you know, about a diehard Niners now, but really about the guys on the Niners that I know and the staff. You know, so I don't feel so traitorous saying this, but maybe I'm just justifying it to myself. But, you know, other teams on here that I saw play, 96 Packers. Yeah, I remember having a big Super Bowl party at our house. I would have been 10 years old at Packers versus Patriots, and Desmond Howard returned the kick, and, you know, all the great players on there. You know, Gilbert Brown, that huge nose guard they had, and Reggie White, all those kind of guys. 98 Broncos, mile high salute. 04 Patriots, you know, that was in my Patriots hating phase, though. I want to say the 04 Patriots, now that's, because this is, we're talking the season, not the year of the Super Bowl. Oh yeah, yeah. 04 Patriots, I think that's when I had my first job, well, my first real job. I've only had 4 jobs in my life, and I always say I'll only have 4 jobs. I was a newspaper delivery boy when I was like 12 years old. Then I worked at a restaurant called Champs. It was like a sports bar, kind of like a more restaurant than bar when I was in high school. Then I coached high school football and track, and now Juggernaut. So that job working at Champs, one of my first days on the job was the Super Bowl. And I was 17 years old, but I was huge. I was like 6'2", 260. So I was a bouncer, security, you know, doing security stuff in the bar part of the sports bar, which is illegal. But I remember watching, you know, so I was watching that Super Bowl, Panthers versus Patriots, in a bar at 17 years old. And so I have a different memory of that, but, you know, Vinatieri with the last minute kick and John Casey kicked it out of bounds and all that stuff. But those are the teams, you know, that stand out to me from that top list. But it got me thinking about what are the best teams that didn't win the Super Bowl. So I have all ones that I watched that you know, in somewhat aware stage of my life, from my teenage years on, and my thoughts about those. So going 6-1, because I couldn't pick just 5. Number 6. 2014 Seahawks, they were 12-4, 6 Pro Bowlers, 5 All-Pros. And this team, of course, came about as close as you could to winning a Super Bowl without winning it. And the infamous, you know, not giving the ball to Marshawn Lynch, but Russell Wilson throwing that pick to Malcolm Butler on the goal line, which sealed it for the Patriots. And this team had Legion of Boom defense. They had young Russell Wilson, who, you know, Russ has made such a ass clown of himself the last few years that, you know, you kind of forget how really exciting and good he was, you know, in his earlier career running around. And, you know, especially being a 49ers fan, like, he would just always do something crazy, amazing at the end of the game. Like, you'd get 5 minutes left in the game and he starts escaping and he just starts making these plays. So young Russ, you know, this would have been his second, third year in the league, running the ball great and handing it to my man, Marshawn Lynch. So I threw the shot put at the University of California, Berkeley, and my freshman year at Cal, fellow freshman, he was a bit bigger deal, was Marshawn Lynch, ghost riding the whip with, you know, the trainer's cart around the field. I was at Cal for the very brief but exciting golden years of Cal football. It was only like, I was only there for 2 years, and they were only, you know, they only ever been good for about 2 or 3 years, but I was there for that time. Aaron Rodgers, Marshawn Lynch, Justin Forsett, J.J. Arrington running for 2,000 yards, a young DeSean Jackson, all those kind of guys. So Marshawn and I were both freshmen there, so always have a special place in my heart for Marshawn Lynch. Beast mode, the king of Oakland, just a hilarious dude, and, you know, ran the hell out of the football. And this team, if you're into the analytics, the advanced stats, one of the highest DVOAs ever. This would have been their second Super Bowl in a row, but that Super Bowl winning team the year before that kicked the Broncos butt in the Super Bowl, that team's like the highest ever from the advanced stats type of play, EPA and DVOA and all that kind of stuff. So great team, as close as you can get to winning the Super Bowl, but not quite because of that Patriot magic. Next up, that team that the other Seahawks team kicked their butt, the 2013 Broncos. And these two teams could have gone either way because it was kind of this amazing defense with the Seahawks team and then the amazing offense with the 2013 Broncos team. I remember watching that Super Bowl and it was the snap over Peyton Manning's head, and it was just kind of like, whoa, what happened? Whoa, what's happening? They're getting their ass kicked, and the game was over before you knew it. And, you know, instead, on that Super Bowl Sunday, I probably just had to eat a bunch of fried food and get really drunk instead of paying attention to the game. Terrible. But that offense was incredible. So 13-3, 5 Pro Bowlers, 4 All Pros, MVP Peyton Manning, statistically his greatest year ever, the highest scoring offense of all time. He set the touchdowns record, the passing touchdowns record. They beat the Pats in the AFC Championship, which is always an accomplishment, 26-16, which beating a team by 10 points, that's a lot. That's a lot in a especially a championship game. NFL games are not decided by double digits very often. It's rare to see, you know, a line that's a touchdown or more for a reason. When you look at Demaryius Thomas, 1,430 receiving yards. Eric Decker, 1,288 receiving yards. Wes Welker and Julius Thomas, they were like 780 and 778 receiving yards. Julius Thomas, kind of a short career, but an excellent, you know, super athletic tight end. Four receivers over 775 yards for the season. I haven't looked it up, but I wouldn't be shocked if that's never happened before and it's never happened since. Peyton was just distributing the ball all over, you know. Demaryius Thomas, beast, rest in peace. Eric Decker was awesome. You know, it was like a new age Ed McCaffrey, kind of Wes Welker doing Wes Welker stuff. They had, shout out to a track guy, Trindon Holiday, real little guy, like 5'5", was one of the best sprinters in the country in high school and at LSU, and then decided not to go with track. Probably a good financial decision for him, but real threat in the return game. Had a couple returns for touchdowns throughout the season, punt and kickoff. And then the early, you know, part of the core that became that incredible defense that won Peyton Manning a Super Bowl a couple years later, but Champ Bailey, Chris Harris Jr., Danny Trevathan, Von Miller, but in a limited role, Malik Jackson. Von Miller was suspended and injured that year, so I think he only played like 9 games. But that was a team where when the Seahawks kicked their ass in the Super Bowl, it was shocking because they were so outstanding and dominant throughout the year. Number 4 on my rankings, the 2022 Philadelphia Eagles. And it pains me to say that because of the abomination of NFC Championship game that was with Brock getting knocked out so early. But I think the 2023 late season and playoff Eagles collapse maybe has tainted people's view of that Eagles team last year. 70 sacks, the third most ever for a single season. And not just, 70 is a ton. And it was because they're coming from all over. You know, it's Hassan Reddick, Fletcher Cox, Brandon Graham, the other DN's name's escaping me, but tons of great pass rushers. Corners who played really well last year, Bradbury and Slay. Better safeties with C.J. Gardner-Johnson. And then you look at their offense, the best offensive line in the NFL, a group of very effective running backs, A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, healthy Dallas Goedert, Jalen Hurts running Shane Steichen's offense, which proved to be much better, certainly, than their offense this year. But the way that they looked in the Super Bowl against the Chiefs, that was a great, great football team that most years probably wins the Super Bowl. Great team there. 8 Pro Bowlers and 6 All-Pros for them. Now in the top 3, this one of my favorite teams, 2012 San Francisco 49ers, 11-4-1 in the regular season, 9 Pro Bowlers, 9 All-Pros. That's really 9 All-Pros. And I think there was one, their punter. So 8 position players All-Pros is incredible. This year's 49ers, you had Trent, Christian McCaffrey, George Kittle, Fred Warner as first team All-Pros, Javarius Ward, I think Juszczyk, they did All-Pro for Juszczyk as well. Javarius Ward and Brandon Ayuk on the second team. But, Juice, awesome. Love him. The fullback spot's kind of an interesting one because it's not that there's not that much competition for it. These 9 All-Pros only have one special teams guy, but everyone else was like dudes. Joe Staley, the entire linebacker group, all 4 linebackers, Patrick Willis, Navarro Bowman, Alden Smith, Ahmad Brooks, all 4 All-Pros. Justin Smith, just monsters. And that's what made me love this 2012 49ers team so much. So they went, lost in the NFC Championship, then went to the Super Bowl and lost, and then lost in the NFC Championship the next year. But that run with Harbaugh, just playing such incredibly physical football. Huge O-line, Mike Iupati was another one of the All-Pros. They had Leonard Davis on that O-line, Alex Boone. They were going to smash you. Vernon Davis at tight end, an all-time freak beast. Frank Gore hammering people in the backfield. Deshaun Golston was another one of the All-Pros at safety. I mean, most of what he did would probably be illegal in today's NFL, along with Dante Whitner. Crabtree at wide receiver, Randy Moss out of retirement at wide receiver. But it's super, super physical football, which is what Jim Harbaugh produces. He did it at Stanford, even as a Cal guy. Jim Harbaugh Stanford teams, where they're like, hey, here's 9 offensive linemen, a quarterback, and Toby Gerhart. We're going to run it. Do something about it. And no one could, with a bunch of Stanford nerds. So that's really impressive. But that 2012 49ers team lost a very close Super Bowl to the Ravens with the blackout and all that kind of stuff. But awesome team, super physical, great run for the Niners, similar to the great run they're on right now. And I put the 2012 49ers on here over the 2019 49ers because my friend Joe Staley said that the 2012 49ers were better, and he was on both of those teams. So next up, most people would probably have this team as the number one best team to not win the Super Bowl, but they're the Patriots, and I don't like them that much. So they're going to be number 2, 2007 Patriots, 16-0, 8 Pro Bowlers, 9 All-Pros. This is the Spygate revenge year, number 1 offense in the NFL, number 4 defense. You had Brady, statistically his best season ever, operating at the peak of his powers. Obviously, they won all their regular season games and then lost a crazy Super Bowl to the Giants and the NASCAR pass rush of Strahan and JPP and Justin Tuck and OC Umanura, were really able to just get hot and dominate through the playoffs. But through the regular season, only three games that they won by less than a touchdown. As I said earlier, it's rare to see an NFL, pretty rare to see an NFL spread, Vegas, the guys who build the big casinos, that's a touchdown or more, and they would have covered a touchdown, a 6.5 point spread or more in all but three games. Really remarkable, a dominant team. Randy Moss with his best season ever. I still think younger Vikings Randy Moss, probably a more explosive, exciting player, but that Randy Moss was incredible. Wes Welker, probably his best season or one of his best seasons ever, especially getting to operate opposite Moss and have, he's had great quarterbacks, Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, but, he was really doing it. And then classic Patriots defense, all-pro year for Mike Vrabel, and all the great guys that they have, Rodney Harrison and so forth. And then finally, my number one, the best team, in my opinion, to have not won the Super Bowl, to have lost the Super Bowl, in fact, the 2001 St. Louis Rams get upset. Tom Brady's first year as a starter, Vinatieri makes the kick, blah, blah, blah. The greatest show on turf, Rams. I'll admit personal bias here because that NFL 2K1, NFL 2K2, I'm playing on my Sega Dreamcast, maybe a PS2 back in that time. But those Rams teams, the greatest show on turf, their offense was just amazing. Kurt Warner, the MVP. Marshall Faulk, the MVP runner-up. So in 99, Kurt Warner wins the MVP. 2000, Marshall Faulk wins the MVP. 2001, Kurt Warner wins the MVP with Marshall Faulk as the runner-up for MVP. That's an all-time offense, no matter what. You have the last three MVPs on your team. Granted, just two guys, but the last three MVP winners all on that team. Seven Pro Bowlers, five All-Pros. The Pancake Man, Orlando Pace, as an All-Pro. Ernie Conwell, their tight end, second team All-Pro. Not actually All-Pros, but incredible players that year, not All-Pros. Isaac Bruce and Torrey Holt. All four of their wide receivers were dangerous. Oz Hazir Hakeem, Ricky Prohl, and a much, much improved defense. Lovie Smith coming over there to become their defense coordinator, where the previous year they had like the number 28 ranked defense or something, went all the way up to the number 7 defense that year. So a lot of balance because they didn't just have the number 1 offense. They had the number 1 offense total yards by 800 yards over the second ranked offense, which was the 2001 Colts, Peyton Manning, Edgerrin James, Marvin Harrison, Reggie Wayne, Dallas Clark, that kind of team. So over another great, great, all-time talented offense, they were the best by 800 yards. Most of the time, it's like 50 yards, maybe 100 yards. If you look at the whole rankings, second to third, fourth, they're like more ahead of second place than second place is ahead of like 10th place. So that greatest show on turf. I love playing with them on video games, but they were incredible to watch. I was so bummed when the Patriots won that Super Bowl because I really liked that Rams team. That's my top 6 teams that lost the Super Bowl. So go check out that article on ESPN with the top ranking all 57 Super Bowl champions. This Friday, I'm going to come back and I'm going to talk about this Sunday's Super Bowl, who I think is going to win, why, how it's all going to go down. So that's Beers with Chad. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Subscribe, rate, review. Cheers.